Okay, good evening. Welcome, everyone, to the 529 Emergency Preparedness Discussion Net, courtesy of the WA7ABU 529 Repeater. This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. My name is Brett, and I'm net control for today, July 21st, 2020.
This is the WA7ABU Repeater.
This net meets each Tuesday evening from 7 to 8 p.m. local time on 145.29 MHz. This is a designated emergency frequency, so we'll break if any real emergency occurs. Our alternate frequency is 145.19 with a tone of 100. We appreciate those who stand by and allow us to have a clear frequency for the next hour, which discuss emergency preparedness with updates on the COVID-19 pandemic. See, all amateur operators are welcome to participate in COVID-19 discussions during the net. We'll start with a short check-in, and stations would like to participate or maybe just listen in on the discussion. I don't have the doctor here with me tonight, just me, so we can talk about COVID-19. We can talk about some other emergency preparedness issues that anything that you have to bring up. Even we could talk about some equipment and things that people might use during the summer. I know Jager's out there. He's been showing me nice pictures of his solar oven and how effective that is. That's kind of an interesting thing. We'll talk a little bit about things besides COVID if you'd like. Anyway, let's take some check-ins. I want to, when you check in, please identify with your call sign slowly and phonetically, and also your name and location to be recognized by net control. Now, if there's anyone on EchoLink, let's see who's out there first on EchoLink for the Emergency Preparedness Net. Okay, not hearing anybody on EchoLink, so let's take general check-ins for the emergency prep net.
Good afternoon. Alpha Golf 7, Oscar Golf, Doug in Newburgh.
Hi, Brett. Whiskey 7, Charlie Mike, Bruce.
K6, you're at Tango X-Ray. Dan.
Kilo 5, Charlie, Papa, Charlie, Mike.
Okay, let's little pause there. So let's check those guys in. That was Mike, Kilo 5, Charlie, Papa, Charlie. Before that was Dan, Kilo 6, Sierra Tango X-Ray. Bruce, Whiskey 7, Charlie, Mike. And Doug started us off, Alpha Golf 7, Oscar Golf. Thank you all for checking in. Anybody else?
Kilo Foxtrot 7, India, Kilo India, Eric from Canby.
Okay, good evening, Eric. Kilo Foxtrot 7, India, Kilo India, welcome from Canby there. Go ahead. Anybody else? Go ahead.
Good evening. This is Kilo Kilo 7, Alpha Romeo Tango, Art in Canby.
Good evening. Whiskey 7, Echo Echo Oscar, Craig McMinnville.
Okay, there's two more. That was Whiskey 7, Echo Echo Oscar, Craig McMinnville, and Art, Kilo Kilo 7, Alpha Romeo Tango. Welcome to the net. Anybody else?
Kilo India 7, Foxtrot Whiskey Hotel, and Kilo India 7, Foxtrot Whiskey Papa, Alan and Jennifer, Salem.
Okay, we have Alan and Jennifer there, Kilo India 7, Foxtrot Whiskey Hotel, and Kilo India 7, Foxtrot Whiskey Papa. Thank you for checking in. That's 10 of us so far. Who else? Hey, this is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. This is the emergency preparedness set, and we're taking check-ins. Okay, well, we'll pause in the action there. I guess there's enough of us that we could probably do some announcements for the net. Does anyone have any announcements that they'd like to announce, I guess? Come now, please. Okay, not hearing anything. Well, let's see. One thing that relates to emergency preparedness announcement-wise is if you have heard of the WinMore protocol, which is a digital modulation scheme that was used for sending WinLink messages. The WinMore protocol has been deprecated. That means it's gone away. They will no longer have that mode on WinLink. So what do you do instead? Well, you're supposed to use a mode by the same author called RDOP, A-R-D-O-P, or Alpha Romeo Delta Oscar Papa. Or you can use a shareware program that is called VARA. That's Victor Alpha Romeo Alpha, VARA or Vera, depending on your pronunciation there. Shareware has very good throughput. It's actually almost as fast as PAC-DOR 3 in terms of speed on HF, and it is much faster than anything we have on FM. So good modes to speed up your digital message handling there for emergencies. And WinLink is a you know, pretty much a standard for the ARIES groups around the country. They use it a lot to send messages. Has the advantage. A lot of forms are available for message handling for various organizations, and that's really its specialty. You fill out the form and you send it by WinLink mail to someone, either by multiple means, and they get it. So, any questions on that? Okay, and on that note, I think I probably should mention that, you can still practice, doing emergency preparedness stuff, even though you can't get together and work in the, EOC with a bunch of people. This dilemma seems to be falling here. We can talk about that, too, as far as, well, how do you practice these things if you can't use your facility? Well, that was a discussion that they brought up for the upcoming October simulated emergency test, which happens twice a year. It's supposed to be, helping us stay prepared in the event of a disaster. Well, my personal feeling on this, and welcome comments, is that we actually have a disaster. It's called a pandemic, and the disaster means that you can't do the things. You don't have the people available to do the things in the setting that you're normally used to using. So, that is what we're supposed to be preparing for. It's not just weather and earthquakes and floods and things like that that hams can help out with. So my feeling as far as being prepared is that you still need to practice. You still need to remember that most people would like to have, some kind of written messages sent to them. And if you don't generate it digitally, you need to have someone at least transcribe it and hand it over in a form that someone can read. Any questions or comments on that? So anyway, on that note, there was a little bulletin from the ARRL that during the, I think it was the month of May, they did have an exercise with the Red Cross. Their volunteers did handle messages for the Red Cross on behalf of them, and they did it all socially distant from their stations. They made up their own messages, and they sent them using the Red Cross forms. And then they, you know, cooperated by having people consolidate these messages at various sort of intake radio stations. They compiled them and then delivered them. So they handled some 600 plus messages during their exercise, and it was pretty successful considering they were not in their normal radio rooms and things working together. So it can be done. Any questions, comments, or things about practicing for emergency exercises? Okay, well, let's see. Any other announcements for the net? Okay, we'll go back to taking more check-ins. We only have 10 of us here. And this is the emergency preparedness set, Kilo Golf 7 Golf Delta Bravo, and I'll take a few more check-ins. Okay, I guess it'll just be 10 of us to begin with. Well, if you are listening in the background, let's see. So we in terms of looking at the COVID-19 news, so it's... go to that. Again, I've asked Dr. Sund whether she wanted to be here tonight to describe any new happenings in terms of the medical aspects of the COVID-19. If there's any questions we have that we can't sort of answer. She said that she didn't think that there was very much new news. Again, we're following trends that we talked about before. And there are things that are in development in terms of vaccines. We do not have a vaccine yet, and that's one topic we can discuss a little bit about that. We can talk a little bit about numbers and trends, and I do want to mention that, talk a little bit about, we'll just start first with Oregon news, and then we'll talk about still, the idea of information and disinformation during, this is a pandemic and other, things that we face every day, okay? So, were there anybody that have any, I'm just going to go over the Oregon numbers a little bit here, and then we can move on. What I'd like to do is if you have a computer, I'm just going to send you to a kind of a simple website here now. Oregon Live has a decent web page here. Let's see if I can get back to here. Give you the website here. Okay. So if you look at projects.oregonlive.com, so that's something sponsored by the Oregonian. Projects.oregonlive.com. So word Oregon, L-I-V-E, or Lima, India, Victor. echo.com/coronavirus. Charlie Oscar Romeo, Oscar November Alpha, Victor India Romeo, Uniform Sierra. Okay, it is a coronavirus at a glance page. Latest numbers, maps, charts to keep you up to date. And it's all of these sites kind of show you kind of the same information. You can go to the OHA website and get some information, but what I'd like you to do is just kind of look at these charts for, what they are. They're just months on the bottom starting in April going up to July 21st, showing a variety. Sorry, timed out there. These are charts, and there's also a little map of the state showing counties. Okay, it starts out with counties and cases reported, and you can hover over each county on that page. So we need to fill on that website. Okay, so the first thing to just kind of look at, and maybe the thing that's confusing is that, when you look at our data in our state, compared to other states, okay, you have to have some kind of way of comparing, okay? So, we have to usually because Oregon doesn't have, you know, as many people as other states. You know, we need to tell whether our numbers are comparable to other states or whether they're, you know, reflective of the fact that we don't have as many people living here. So what they do, you know, they actually report their cases in terms of per 10,000 people. That's the typical way that county data is expressed. So you get cases per 10,000 people, cases per, you know, and that actually differs from county to county. You can look at the overall Gilmer cases. For example, we're supposed to be averaging 333 average new cases per day, okay? But then you break it down by county, there are, you know, different numbers in different counties. So you would think that the first thing I wanted to make sure everybody's aware of is that, you know, different counties with lower populations, you know, you might see have a large number of cases for their per 10,000. You know, is that something to worry about, or yes or no? What do you think? So the thing is that what I'm just trying to say here is that you might see that our overall numbers aren't that bad, you know, 333 cases per day, you know, but that is every day. There's average is 333 new cases per day. Now, if that just stayed constant, you know, how many cases would we have in 10 days, for example? Any guesses there? Is that even at a small number per day that, you know, those cases accumulate, right? And at 2 weeks, you might be all better from it, you know, or you might be sick from it or whatever. But, you know, just say 10 days, you got, start at 333 per day, and then tomorrow 666, and then 999. It goes up, right? 10 days, 3,330 people, you know, after 10 days, if it's averaging that at a constant rate, okay? And so the question is it a constant rate? You know, that's kind of the deal. So, you know, what you have to kind of look at is sort of the, again, we've talked about the number of percent positives. You know, we're trying to test as much as we can, supposedly. But we are kind of interested in the proportion of the people who actually test positive. And, you know, the trend line that's on this page, very interesting because it, you know, started out really kind of bad, about 6% of the population testing positive on average back in April. And then it just kind of steadily went down, a little bump there in May, went up a bit, and then it went down again. And our lowest point on the 7-day average was right at the end of May, where we had about, let's see if it shows me, 2.2%. positives, and a weekly average of, you know, 1.7%, the 7-day average positive test rates at the end of May. So right now, you know, it just sounds since something happened, you know, June, maybe someone could tell me what happened in June. It seems to be going kind of up and down and over and up and up and up and up and up, and it just seems to be a kind of an upward trend, you know, zigzagging a bit, but going up and up and up. What happened? And what do you think about that? Okay, so I think that was a double. So I heard a QV in there. Let's take QV first and then see who else was in there.
I think it was KF7BUV, Walt in Woodburn.
CTC.
Okay, so that's good. I got Kilo Foxtrot 7, Bravo Uniform Victor, Walter, and we have Kilo 5, Charlie, Papa Charlie, Mike. So let's, Walt, did you have a comment on that?
Well, I think what happened was, first off, we had Memorial Day weekend, And then June rolls around and everybody thinks, oh, the weather's getting nicer, let's get out and let's do more things, and there's weddings starting up and all that kind of stuff. I think people are just got a little bit of cabin fever.
Okay. All right. Well, so, you know, so we, May 15th is when we started doing our little reopening thing, okay? And it actually went down after that. There's a thing on daily new cases. So the daily positive test rate, so that's one thing to look at. And the other is just sort of daily new cases. Now, people have argued, well, the daily new cases, we're certainly testing more, so maybe we'd have more cases. But that doesn't seem to be the case, because when you look at the percentage of positives, that is going up in this sort of way. So something happened, you know, in our behavior, in our reopening scheme, maybe, around the first week in June. And I'm figuring that there's a bit of a lag there between when we are trying to average it on a weekly basis, right? So our weekly basis around the 1st of June was around 1.9%. You know, now it is 5.2%, okay? That's our weekly average currently right now. So it has gone up a bit, you know. It's not a huge, you know, really steep thing, but it is not does not seem to be going back down again. So this is really, I guess, the kind of information that you guys need to know. You start looking at the hospitalization. I said, well, let's worry about that a little bit. Okay, hospitalization. Well, you go back, and it seems to just follow it. If you line them up, you can kind of see, you know, that the number of people hospitalized on June 2nd was 46. So ICU was 17, ventilators 10. Now we're at 156 people hospitalized, 53 in the ICU and 33 on the ventilators. So, you know, they're not, you know, astoundingly bad numbers, right? But they are definitely following the trend going up, same as it was, you know, as the cases. So we know that just having a case, you know, there was a certain number of people will get really sick and go to the hospital. That's obviously less than the, you know, the total number of cases we have. So, but trend is the same. Mike, did you have a comment?
Yeah. What happened to the regular flu? I took a flu shot. Did we completely cure the last flu and there's nobody? In other words, what's the count on the regular flu? Is there such a count anywhere?
Okay, so this is a good one to bring up because this is a question that Paul, KB7PPM, asked me. He sent me a copy of a Twitter page here. And the Twitter page says, you know, he asked me, is this true? And I'll tell you what it says. It says here, you know, from supposedly the Department of Health and Services in Texas, saying that they're, you know, infection type in the year influenza and the number of deaths per year, and it had, you know, the 2017, 2018, 2018, 2019 deaths, and then they have the COVID-19 deaths as of 2020. Okay, and then there's all these, you know, kind of abbreviated web page addresses on here, okay? And so I looked at this thing and I thought, this doesn't look right. I typed in the web page addresses and they're not real. Now, this is not the Department of Health and Human Services in Texas. It looks very similar to it, but it is not. And so what this number, if I looked at that report, and you may have seen something like that, asking that question, it says, wow, look, there are so many people that died, and they're saying like 10,000 people died in Texas from the flu last year, and there's 3,000 this year from COVID-19. Okay, so let's, if you would like, so we did a little fact-checking of that and said that the CDC tracks that. Okay, first of all, I can tell you it's fake, right, because right away, the websites are not real that they gave us, all right? So, you know, this is something I wanted to segue into in terms of how do you interpret information and disinformation? This I call is pretty sophisticated disinformation. Okay, it's showing you the flu deaths at some rate, you know, and then showing you COVID deaths and saying, well, look, it's less than the flu rate. Okay, well, that's okay. Let's talk about that. Okay, KG7GDB here. So the deal on the flu, all right, is that yes, there is something that you can go to the CDC and you can look up influenza burden. Okay, now it turns out that influenza is an estimated statistic, okay? And what the doctor told me, I asked her about it, she said, what they do is they have a lot of surveys, they work with different hospitals, they do kind of a population survey. They do not accumulate all the data on flu. The flu is not a reportable disease that is mandatory reporting like COVID-19 is right now. So it, you know, so they, but they want to know about the flu because they have to figure out each year, you know, was the flu vaccine effective or not? And so, you know, the idea is that you want to look at, you want to see if you can get an estimate. Now, it turns out that they project the estimate for the entire United States. They don't actually accumulate the data per state. Okay, that's the first thing. She knew that. That was a red herring for her that, oh, no, there wouldn't be any state data from Texas. In fact, if you go to the DHS site in Texas, type in the word influenza, it doesn't actually come up anything on the search. Okay, so flu data again. So we know it's interesting. So there's the World Health Organization keeps track of the flu in the world. And let's see what Sheila said here. I can give you the current numbers on the flu for the last year. Okay, we're still waiting for this year's numbers. So let's see here. So just out of just, you know, so for the 2018-2019 year estimate is 34,200 deaths in the United States based on their models. Again, not actual data. The year before was 61,000 deaths, okay? The year before that, 2016, was 38,000 deaths, and the year 2015 to 2016 is 23,000 deaths, okay? So that's what they figure we have in terms of flu deaths based on estimates and models done by the CDC. Now, let's you think about that. Now, what do we know about the flu? What have we done about the flu? And what do those numbers tell you? Well, first thing that surprised me is that we have that many deaths, okay, from the flu still, when we think we have an illness that we understand and we're, you know, trying to get everyone to be vaccinated for. And we're still having, you know, on the low estimate, 23,000, and the high estimate, 61,000 people dying per year from influenza, okay? Now, what about COVID-19, okay? Well, right now, as of the 20th, 140,157 deaths have reported. The actual number lags about 1 to 4 weeks because they require a death certificate to be submitted before they really count the number, okay? It also doesn't include what the doctor said was excessive deaths, which is deaths without testing, unsupervised deaths at home, incorrect death certificate coding. She said that probably adds another 20 to 30% on top of that in terms of the COVID-19 deaths. Okay, so the magnitude, first of all, if you looked at the Texas number and you said Texas had 11,000 deaths, you'd probably say, really? A third of the people in the whole country is dying from the flu in Texas, huh? That doesn't sound right. Any comments here? IKI? Yeah, Erica, go ahead.
I came across a reporting sheet from the state of Oregon. It's the Oregon Health Authority, and it talks about the number of deaths in Oregon, and it
Says there were a little over 800 deaths last year from flu in Oregon.
Okay.
All right. So, again, probably, you know, I don't know whether it's an estimate or whether, you know, somehow that's data that they've, you know, collected. But, okay, still a large number of people, right? I mean, you know, so what's our current death right now? We just said this. Boom. We're at 269 right now. So, you know, you think, oh, well, that's good, right? Well, it's not good in either way. I think the point I would try to make is that, you know, we still have flu deaths, okay, despite a vaccine program. But, you know, if you look at the flu numbers, they don't go up like this. Our flu season is kind of over for this year. You know, we have to wait till it comes around in the wintertime and then it sort of picks up again. It really is a sort of a seasonal thing. You know quite a bit about it. If people get the vaccine and we guess right on what the vaccine should contain, then those flu numbers, they go down and they go up, but they fluctuate, okay? So, you know, there's a whole science to looking at this stuff and then deciding, what are you going to do with this information? I guess that's the next thing. So as emergency preparedness people and people trying to stay safe and make good judgment calls for themselves, what do you do with the data that says, yes, the flu still kills a lot of people in Oregon and elsewhere, but COVID-19 is killing people and it's on the rise, even if the number hasn't reached the same magnitude, you know, here as the flu did? What do you do with that data? Question. You don't have to answer it. But the point is you have to make a decision for yourself that I think in both cases you'd probably say, well, we need to do more about, you know, preventing the flu as well, because guess what? That's going to be the same this year, and we're going to have COVID on top of it. So we're going to have the problem is we're going to still have the flu burden and then the COVID-19 burden. Now, another thing that the doctor tells me is that most of the time, during flu season, actually hospitals are pretty full of flu patients in the hospital. They tend to run about between 80 and 90% of capacity during flu season, okay? So, again, that's going to add to, in terms of planning, we haven't done anything about the COVID thing yet. It didn't go away with the hot weather. It seems to be going up. So, and, you know, we're sort of sitting back here looking at this smoldering forest fire out in the background and saying, well, you know, it's not so big yet. But, you know, come November, when the flu cases start to rise, you know, you have to, as a planner, decide what are you going to do? You know, are you going to be able to handle both? So this is the thing. I think there's two ways to interpret the data. You know, the fake data was telling us, hey, Texans, don't worry about it. You know, it's not as bad as the flu, and heck, you haven't died from the flu yet. You know, that's the disinformation. And actually, you know, I don't know. What do people think about that? I just think that is like a crime against nature to put that kind of stuff out, to deliberately fake data to make people, you know, make bad decisions.
JK7 ART with the comment.
Go ahead, Art.
You know, what's worse than the misinformation is that a lot of branches in the media, you know, are pushing it for hype. It's selling their news stories, and I don't think they are really doing due diligence to check their sources and see if their information is even factual. That's just my 10 cents. KK7 ART.
Yep, you're right. No, and you know, I like to hear that if you guys find something that like that, you know, go fact check it. Now, it took a while to fact check that because it turns out with the flu data, I wasn't aware of this until today, that it wasn't a state reported thing. I wasn't aware that it wasn't something that we, you know, keep really close CDC statistics on, that, you know, it's not a reportable illness like, you know, this COVID, okay? Some illnesses you have to report, and this one, flu influenza, is not one. They're sort of flu-like illness, and they do surveys to figure it out. So, you know, and that's okay. I don't, mind them doing surveys to figure something out and making an estimate. And they, that way they can decide, you know, which cocktail of influenza strains they want to target for the next year. You know, that's what they use that data for, okay? So, anyway, it is something to think about that, you know, in spite of the fact that we have a vaccine for the influenza that's pretty effective, and we have various medicines that we can give to help eliminate flu symptoms, and we know treating flu for years, have a lot of different good techniques and know about how to treat people with flu. We know a lot about how to prevent the flu with the hand washing stuff. That's a good thing for the flu. Hand washing really helps prevent that one. Still have a lot of people die. This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. This is the emergency preparedness net. Let's pause here and see if anybody else wants to check in.
This is KF7GG and Kilo Fox 7, Golf Golf November, checking in.
Let's see, Kilo Golf 7 Delta Golf November. Did I get that right?
No, sorry, that was my fault. Kilo Foxtrot 7 Golf Golf November.
Okay, I got that one. Kilo Foxtrot 7 Golf Golf November. You're Scott, is that correct?
That's right.
Okay, welcome. Yeah, good signal if you're down in Corvallis. See if anybody else. Did you have a question or comment? And go ahead.
No, not at this time. I'm just listening in and taking in the information. So I really appreciate how well researched the information you are presenting to the net tonight. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome, Scott. You know, I mean, that's the thing. I think that this is just one thing. I mean, it's the thing we're worried about right now, and we should be worried about it. But I also want people to worry about, you know, information and, you know, kind of how to, you know, I don't expect you to all be epidemiologists, right? You know, I've had science training. I know sort of the limits of what we do in research. You know, I was a researcher, okay? So, you know, I can give you a perspective on, you know, the sort of glacial speed that research normally works at. I can give you a perspective on what, you know, is happening in terms of the numbers. And we have Dr. Sun who will come on when there's, you know, medical questions. So, you know, if you have, you know, medical questions still about this whole stuff, what's going on or anything that you've heard that seems confusing, you know, again, we can talk about that. And if you want, you can send a message to me at Kilo Golf 7 Golf Delta Bravo at ARRL.net or to the groups.io webpage for this repeater, Whiskey Alpha 7 Alpha Bravo Uniform, groups.io. So anyway, we have had recordings made of these sessions, and you can go back and look at our previous recordings.
This is KF7GG, and thank you, Brett. Yeah, I'm aware of the recordings, and I was wondering if Dr. Sun will be on tonight. I kind of joined in late here.
No, I'm sorry. She won't be on tonight. Again, she sort of came on when we're in a transition period or looking at, you know, medical changes that have really affected us. We're sort of in a holding pattern right now. There's not a lot of new medical news right now. Now there's some. They are reporting early findings of things, which they like to do, just tell you in general that, yes, people are working really, really hard on vaccines, and we're rushing through our first phase one trials and phase two trials. Some particular vaccines have been approved. Actually, they've been bought and paid for by different governments, and they're going to proceed with the clinical trials, which is the next step, big, large-scale clinical trials, and see if it's effective. And on that note, what we know right now about it, and I won't go into a lot of detail, is that, you know, yes, the people who have, there are a couple of ones that are being reported right now where people developed antibodies to the vaccine. That's good. The first thing that has to happen. And they didn't
you know, so any really bad side effects from it. So that's good. So the initial safety and, yes, an immune response thing was done. So the next step is to find out if it actually works. Okay, so we can talk about that, but you know, it hasn't happened yet, okay? We don't know what's going to happen yet. So we don't even know what kind of vaccine is going to turn out to be. Like, we take an annual flu vaccine, okay? And it's important this year for everyone to take their annual flu vaccine, okay? Because remember, the flu is still out there too. And so, you know, do not be an anti-vaxxer on this stuff. It's best if you get the maximum number of people vaccinated, and then guess what? The chance of you getting it goes down for everybody. So that's the whole point of it, all right? Your individual results may vary, as they say, but the overall population results are usually generally productive on when you have a vaccine that's a safe and effective one.
This is GGN again. Thank you for that, Brett. I'm aware of the latest research results on the vaccine, or at least the one vaccine from Oxford, and it looks very promising. My question would be, I've heard that there's some evidence that the COVID-19 is starting to mutate, and so other organ systems are being affected. And the question is, by the time a vaccine gets really produced in mass quantities, is there any chance that perhaps by then it'll be a different strain and this vaccine will be for nothing, or will we be able to cover that as well? Back to you.
Yeah, that's a very good question. Okay, so all viruses mutate because they're kind of don't have real robust DNA repair mechanisms. So they go about, they make lots of copies of themselves, and they mutate. Okay, but it turns out that just let's talk about mutations in general in terms of biology. Most mutations that we have, there's a lot of excess, DNA and RNA. This is an RNA virus, but they're basically, just two strategies. RNA is a single-stranded thing. DNA is double-stranded. This one happens to have RNA in it, but it makes it sort of clever because it goes in and it bonds to your cell manufacturing machinery, and it turns over and says, hey, don't make your normal, nice stuff for clotting or whatever, tissue. Instead, let's make copies of me. And so it makes lots of copies of me. And it turns out in order to do that, there are some constant things that have to happen to it. And the little spiky things in particular are ones that they have identified as being constant. They're constant domains in it amongst the different mutated strains because they need that functionality of the little spiky thing on there in order to attach the cell. And it seems to be that I remember Dr. Sun telling me this, that there are two kind of main strains that they see, and one is more infective than the other, and it seems to result that they both have the spikies. One has more spikes than the other. So you would kind of think, yeah, the one with the more spikes is more effective at bonding to cells, and so it's more infectious. So it is a form follows, function kind of thing. So, if you had a mutation that ended up with, less spikes or no spikes, it wouldn't, the virus, obviously wouldn't be able to vaccinate against it, but the virus would be much less effective at getting you sick. So that kind of mutation wouldn't matter, okay? So, by designing our vaccine against constant parts that are needed for the viral function, we have a better chance of developing a good vaccine that will work in spite of mutations.
This is GGN again. Thank you, Brett. I don't want to hog the session here, and hope if anybody else has a question, I'll let them come on. But I do have another question that's related to what you just said, so I'll just go back to you and see if there's anyone else out there that has any questions that are related to something else. So KF7 GGN back to net.
Okay, this is Kilo Golf 7 Golf Delta Bravo. We have the emergency preparedness set. Right now we happen to be talking about, progress on vaccines. And again, you had one question. Was there anybody else have any other topics, any more check-ins? Come now, please.
Well, doesn't sound like it. Now, you know, this group has been coming. A lot of people that checked in tonight have been coming to the nets, and I think we've got a pretty educated group here, so your basic questions have probably been answered in previous sessions. So that's, again, why the doctor is not here to answer new questions, because until something sort of new comes up, you guys are a good group, and you've had great questions, and I think we pretty much have a shared database of knowledge here. I think we all know kind of what we need to do to keep safe. Most of us, I think, have come back week to week. I haven't lost anybody yet. I don't know, but I'm hoping that you're all being safe. So anyway, with that being said, go back with your question there.
UPC.
All right, Mike in there. Okay, Mike, your turn. Go ahead.
Yeah, let's say I get the flu or I don't know what it is. I'm having symptoms. So I go to the hospital, and I get okay. I get well, and I go out of the hospital. Now, what happens? How do they know whether I had the influenza or the COVID, and I got over it? And you know, how does that work?
Okay, so again, look, we can kind of go back. Now, I'm not a medical doctor. I am a research doctor. Okay, so look, but I will tell you that generally speaking, when you go to the hospital, you get tested for things that the doctor, is trying to diagnose or rule out. Okay, so I think that if you go in with respiratory symptoms or what they call flu-like illness right now, that is the sort of the thing they track, that they sort of say, influenza-like illness, they will test you for influenza. They will, and they will, at this time, test you for COVID-19 as well. And depending on what kind of tests they have available, the one that is sort of the most accurate and uncomfortable is one that's used with cotton swab is pushed back into your nose and swabbed around in there until you're very uncomfortable, and then they use that. Mix it up and in a reagent bottle and send it off to a lab for analysis, okay? The influenza swab, I think, is a throat swab, but don't quote me on that. I could be wrong there. But it is one that they also test for. And so you would, if the doctor thought, right now, if you had respiratory-like syndromes, we would want to know what the result of those tests are. Now, there is a problem right now in the sense that everybody is testing so much that we have a delay in the testing, and that's not a good thing because, it might take you several days. In some places, it's taking up to 11 days to get your test results. Well, you can see that would be a problem, if you have an acute illness. What are you going to do? So I think they probably, and this is, they're going to treat you if you have symptoms that look like COVID and they don't have a diagnosis. They're not just going to let you sit there. They're going to try to treat your symptoms as they appear. But I think they will be presumptive until they actually get the result back on you. KG7GB. So I can tell you that my mother-in-law, who passed away May, went in for medical problems, and they tested her for COVID. They assumed she had COVID. She did not have COVID. They wouldn't go into her room and do really anything. She needed a blood transfusion. Doctors stood outside the doorway, and they really didn't want to, until her test came back negative, really didn't want to do much with her. When it came back negative and she had her blood transfusion, they sent her home. Then she went to follow up with another doctor about why, what was going on. Went to UCLA, and they tested her again for COVID. Unfortunately, that wasn't what was wrong with her. So she did not have it. It was negative, but ended up dying of something else. So that's another issue of presuming everyone has COVID. They still have other problems, too. KG7GDB.
CPC
again.
Yes, go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I'm scheduled to go in on the 30th for a procedure, an operation. And I've put it off now a couple of times. And I'm really afraid that to go to the hospital because all the people around that have the flu. Should I be that afraid, or am I being way too careful?
Well, it's perfectly right to be afraid about it, Mike. I'm not gonna give. Don't presume that this is medical advice. You know, you have to assess your own risk. But in this case, you know, I would ask your physician very carefully. Is this something I can put off? You know, how? And if it says no, we can't put it off. Then you know, you've been taking care of yourself, and you can ask them whether you should go ahead and flu shots are. I think they're starting to come available. For the following year. This is, again, not flu season yet, but, you know, you can ask them about whether you should have that, you know, prior to your procedure. You can plan very carefully, you know, with them what to do. I can tell you that hospitals are probably better places to be in terms of, you know, having everyone there knowing how to do sterile technique and cleaning and doing things than, you know, going into your average restaurant. So, you know, I would take all due precautions to avoid, you know, indoor spaces with other people that you don't know. But, this is something you have to decide with your doctor, in my opinion, and I won't give you a medical advice on that. That's just something you have to assess. But we, you know, needed medical procedures are still needed medical procedures, and it would be a shame if you didn't get something done and that caused God's a problem for you that you couldn't recover from.
Well, I did talk to my doctor a month ago, and he said, I'm scared too. So we put it off for a month, and I'm seriously considering putting it off for another month. So for what it's worth, thanks for the non-advice.
Yep, KD7 GDB. So, I mean, the thing is that you look at, there are worse places in the world to be, right? You know, so if you had said, well, I'm scheduled at Houston Medical Center for it, that may not be a good idea, you know. Oregon still has a relatively low number of cases compared to other places. But, you know, it's interesting. Remember I talked about, going back to that map there, coronavirus at a glance, okay? When you look at the normalized number of cases per 10,000 people, okay, there are certain counties, you know, which have the percent positive rate of the number of people differs from county to county, okay? And, you know, like Union County right now is a 15% positive rate, you know? They are looking at 145 cases per 10,000. You're up here in Multnomah County, is that right? You know, you have a 4.7% positive case, but there's 44 per, you know, 10,000. So, you know, that your odds are actually right now probably lower of encountering someone with COVID in Multnomah County than it is in, you know, a gathering in Umatilla County. Even though they don't have as many cases, there's fewer people, right? But, yeah, I wouldn't show up at a bowling alley with them all, you know.
Once again, I don't want to capitalize on this thing, but I have one more little caveat.
Yeah, okay. Go ahead, and then, again, let me see. Just make sure if anybody else has anything. It is, of course, 7:54, and I'm Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. We have the emergency preparedness net. And let's see, is there anybody else that wants to check in, or can I get somebody on deck here with another question before I let Mike proceed? Okay, not hearing anybody there.
Yeah, go ahead, Mike, with your question or comment.
Yeah, an interesting thing. Go to Google and enter any three numbers. I don't care what three numbers they are. And after that, put new cases and see what happens. It's an interesting, very interesting. I don't know what it means, but it comes up every time.
Yep, I just tried that and I put 156 new cases. The first hit was Florida coronavirus, record 156 new deaths. So anyway, yes, you get, it does dominate the search engines and everything else. And that is a function of the way that our lovely, you know, predictive search engines work, you know, and I'm not convinced that it's doing us a service, especially if it lets you see what they think you want to see. So, you know, if you have been doing a lot of searches on, different kinds of lens filters for, you know, use with photography and putting a bunch of numbers in and doing a lot of searches on that, probably could put 156 in cases and you'd find out the case for your camera for photography filters. So it does have a, you know, an information bias on the search engines.
Sometimes they follow you for months.
W1ERK with a question.
Okay, Robert. Whiskey 1, Alpha Romeo Kilo. Got you checked in. Go ahead.
No, I was just talking with my daughter on the telephone. She's up in Washington State. She was telling me that the states have been ordered to not to report to CDC, they're to report to the government first. Now, I don't know if they can do that and follow that order or wherever it came from. I don't know if it's a rumor, personally. I don't believe it. But have you heard anything about that type of thing?
Yes, I think I have. Kilo Golf 7 Golf Delta Bravo. I think they're probably talking about, there is supposedly the executive branch has ordered that they would like the data sent directly to Department of Human Services at, in the federal government as opposed to the Centers for Disease Control. Now, of course, that's going to cause a lot of confusion for people and a change and, in how they do their thing. And I'm not really quite sure that, personally, that's a very good idea when you have a whole agency who's supposedly is devoted to, the study of disease and all the people that's working there. So I'm not sure that is going to give us better information. And it's probably going to confuse the issue. It'll probably say, we'll just ignore, that data that got lost in between. And, everything looks better if you don't report it, right? So I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it just doesn't sound like to change who you report to when doesn't sound like a strategy to me that's going to help reduce the number of cases.
Personally, I think it's a stupid, ridiculous, asinine order. I wouldn't follow it. W1ARK.
Yep, KG7GDB. So I guess, again, sort of going along, we've had, I want you guys to not dwell too much on the stuff that you can't control. You could, if you have the ability to, if you see something that is a fake news thing, first thing, do not retweet it or, like it or forward it or do anything like that would, show it to your friends, even if you think it's outrageous, okay? wow, can you believe this BS that the person sent me? You know, don't do it, because what you're doing is you're spreading the disinformation, and it gets out there, and it gets on the search engines, and then people are like, as soon as you type it, you know, something like flu worse than, you know, versus coronavirus Texas, you get the fake news thing. So you're just basically advertising, you know, this disinformation. So really, you know, I think in any type of, you know, disaster, emergency, military operation, anything, we have to depend on good intelligence. And so, you know, rumors are rampant. They, you know, one guy they caught confessed to doing it for fun. He thought it was great, that he was putting his stuff out and making people get all excited and grab their guns and go, you know, run after and protect Confederate statues and things like that. He thought that was amusing. I would say that, you know, when you do this, you know, this is disinformation, and I think that's a pretty, you know, I'm no real great student of war, but, you know, disinformation campaigns have been around for a long time. You know, distract people from the real information that's needed, you know, dilute resources, spread dissent. You know, they've done that all along. I'm sure you all have anecdotes that you can say. So these days, it's just so much easier, you know, to spread the information. And the bad news stuff, the really, you know, the guy that they caught admitted he says, yeah, he was making money on advertising because he got so many hits on his website. So that's one motive why they do this. They put advertising stuff on there, and they put something really outrageous on there, and they get all these hits. They get paid for it. I don't know if you knew that or not, but don't spread disinformation. That's important. Recognize if you see something that you're concerned about, you can report it to somebody. That's our job. You know, we don't make up our own messages unless we see it happening. Okay, let me get a drip here. Okay, just another emergency preparedness thing, just a reminder that, you know, things happen even when you're, so little anecdote, we were out a couple of days ago, and I think, and we were out testing for our signals in the park near Kaiser Permanente at South Salem, and Dan and Alan and myself, and we're out there with our satellite dish, and we're, all of a sudden, there's this huge flash of light, big boom, and then transformer and the power pole in front of us goes boom, and the one on the corner goes boom. So three giant flashes. We thought it was a firework at first. It was so loud, and just a tremendous, color light show. And then all the lights in the area went out. Okay, and someone had. So you know what happened, right? So I go walking over there with my cell phone light, and go find out that somebody has actually crashed into a power pole. He fortunately walked away from it. But remember, these things, you know, emergencies can happen anytime. You know, it's not all one thing going to happen. And so all of a sudden, yes, we're out there. I'm stupidly don't even have my HT with me. I have my cell phone. That works. You know, but, you know, keep prepared for anything, all hazards, right? You know, so somebody might very well just run into your power pole one day and knock out your power. And fortunately, they got it back on for us, but Frank, who lived nearby, he didn't have his power back for, about 12 hours. So, it's, or more actually, about 14 or 15 hours, until like 2:30 the next day. So, at any rate, you know, things happen. Be prepared. Remember, you still need batteries. You still need to practice stuff and, take care of each other. You know, I was able to be there until the fire department. We had power lines on the ground. There's your driver. He had a motor vehicle accident in bushes there. The fireman told me, okay, keep people away from it or go block off the street here. Anyway, you got to still take care of each other. So that's the last I want to say on that. Any final check-ins, comments before I close on that? I did discover that my Chinese radio had a little flashlight on it, so I was able to use that little feature to get in my door. That was pretty good while talking on the radio to people. So that was another fun thing to have happen. So don't remember, if you have a little flashlight, figure out how to turn it on your radio. That's a useful thing when the lights are out. Okay.
time is now 8.05 p.m., and this concludes the 529 Emergency Preparedness Net. I think we'll have a recording available. Richard, I think, has been recording, or perhaps Dan can pull these from the Broadcastify stream that is always recording things from the repeater. Anyway, we can have a reporting made available in a week or so that'll show up on the WA7ABU groups.io page under the files. So if you need to miss this or go back to any of the previous sessions, it's on there. Anyway, this concludes the Emergency Preparedness Net. That will be, thank you to Dan, WA7ABU, for the use of this repeater. Thanks to all those who participated today and those who stood by to give us a clear channel. This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo, closing the net now, 8.06 p.m. We now return the repeater to normal undirected amateur operations. Be safe, and we'll see you next week. KG7GDB.